Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collective works of Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I'm Annie A.K.
And I am Jessie.
And today we're talking about chapters 21 through 25 of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
Yes, we're back to business.
We are back on it. It feels a little bit like I had to remind myself how we did this.
I know. We took a break. We're not a movie review podcast. We are a Jane Austen book podcast, mostly.
Mostly. Although I'm ready to talk about Emma anytime, any place.
I know. It's going to be, like, hard to resist bringing it up.
Pretty much. But if that's something that interests you, please refer to our bonus episode, a 50-minute discussion on whether or not we liked Emma.
Which started as, let's have just, like, a 20-minute chat about... Anyway... Yeah, so I had to remind myself, like, I went on my Goodreads page to, like, remind myself what books I'd read, and I'd read so many books since we last talked, and I was just looking through the titles, and I did legitimately like most of them, and a couple of them I really loved, but I was just, like, I didn't really want to talk about any of them. So the thing I wanted to talk about most was the Netflix show Love is Blind. Okay. Because I am an educated and well-read person. And I don't know, have you heard of this show?
I have heard about this show pretty much daily.
I know, you're going to get, like, really mad at me because you're like, why were you wasting time watching this when you should be watching Lovesick? But I needed something to just turn off my brain for a bit. And it's this reality show on Netflix hosted by Nick and Vanessa Lachey. And I use hosted, like, very loosely. They barely show up. But Netflix calls it a social experiment. And it's basically where single men and single women are dating in these isolation pods. And so they bond without seeing the other person. So without knowing what they look like, their race, their age, that sort of thing. I mean, they're all very good looking people. But we follow certain couples and who... legitimately fall in love in these pods and get engaged, and then they meet in these very dramatic and in some cases extremely romantic scenes where they, like, run to each other, which totally works on me, which is no surprise. And then they all go to Mexico and they see the people they turn down, so there's some drama. And then they move in together in these, like, apartments, and then they have a wedding where they are legitimately in wedding dresses, like, all dressed up, and they have to say whether they do or they don't. And some people say they don't. And so basically it hits all my buttons. It's like reality TV, romance, drama, weddings. I fell in love with some of the couples. I didn't like some of the couples. I mean, I watched The Bachelor, so this is it's not like a stretch that I would enjoy this. But I really recommend. It was so nice to just turn off my brain. There was definitely some Austen in there, I promise. There are people left at the altar. There are engagements. People turned down. Other people, there's jealousies, female friendship. I don't know. It entertained me more than most of the books I read, which is awful because I read, like, legitimately, like, six books, including one I think you're going to talk about. But, yeah, so I know. I'm, like, the absolute worst. We're supposed to talk about books, but I had to, like, put it all out there.
I mean, generally, like, a lot of books I feel like have influence these kind of shows anyways. I can't really talk because there's that one show that I'm looking forward to where these single people learn a dance, and the first time they meet is they don't talk to each other. They just come up and they do this choreographed dance in, like, in public, and maybe they have chemistry and they feel the vibe and maybe they don't. And some of the clips that I've seen, because it was originally a British reality show and they're bringing it here, some of them is just, like, real, just so many sparks, and then the shooting is really beautiful, and I'm just sitting there crying over the commercial, so I'm not judging.
Okay, good. I know. Well, I feel like as long as we bring it back to, like, Austen and romance, it doesn't really matter. So I promise next time I will be back on books. I'm reading a little bunch right now, so, but yeah, so forgive this deviation or whatever. I promise I'm still reading. But
you're just
yeah.
a complex individual.
I'm so complex. And anyway, what about you? Please tell me you've read a book.
I did read a book. I finally caught up with the rest of the world and read Little Fires Everywhere because the show is coming out, I think, on Hulu. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I actually end up reading, I want to say, like, 2/3 of it all in one day. But I really, really enjoyed it. I think Celeste Ng has a really fantastic way of, like, showing different characters' perspectives and everything. There was actually a part where I was a little hesitant to start to finish reading it because you're so much in the Mrs. Richardson's character, where she's just very like self-righteous, privileged white woman. And I don't want to say it was like sympathetic, but her way of thinking just infuriated me so much. I'm like, why do I want to put myself through this? But I actually thought that the ending was a little predictable, but I enjoyed the journey. So, hot take, Celeste Ng, Little Fires Everywhere. Quite good.
I wanted to like this so much.
Really?
Didn't. I know. I mean, I love her writing. Like, I loved her other book.
Yeah.
And I think, like, part of the stuff I didn't like were the characters. So that's not really the author's fault, you know? And, like, I grew up in this, like, similar type suburb. Yeah. And so it was just, like, maybe, like, too close to home at some points or, like, being pregnant. I don't know. It was really about, like, motherhood.
There was a lot of mother stuff. Well, I mean, I think it was the same thing. Like, you are so much in this woman's head where, like, I kind of relate a little bit to it and that's uncomfortable. But also, I don't like her and you spend so much time with her.
Yeah.
And I actually went to college in that area, so I know that vague area reasonably well. And I think they also went to Pittsburgh, too, where I grew up. So I'm like,
yeah, like literally very close to home.
Yeah. This is why sometimes I'm like, I think my next book now, actually, I only just literally am only in chapter one. It's more of a YA book, but at the same time, I think it's like a teen girl revenge situation. Forgot to actually what it's called. What's it called? Fair is Foul, I think, or Foul is Fair. So, like, here's me saying that, like, oh, I want something that's a little less, like, emotionally confrontational and demanding, but it's like, oh, it's about, like, four girls in high school who decide to seek vengeance against a bunch of prep school boys and also their witches.
Super light and fluffy is what you're telling me.
Fair, yeah. Pretty much I just picked it up because the title is called Foul is Fair. It's very, very Shakespeare reference-y title. So how can I say no to that?
No, that sounds pretty good, actually.
Also just started watching FX's new show Dev, starring Sonoya Mizuni, directed and written by Alex Garland. He's one of my favorite writers for the screen. I remember reading The Tesseract when I was in college, which was quite a while ago. So that's been very good. But otherwise, my life has just been rewatch central. It's been Supernatural. I've been rewatching Westworld before it comes out. And because all of that stuff can be quite heavy, I have been interjecting Lovesick in between because it is my comfort watch.
Oh, I gotta watch the show. I know. Okay. I get it.
It's not pointed or anything. It's just the show that I genuinely put on when I don't know what to watch and I just want to appreciate things. It is very funny, though. We've both seen Emma again since we recorded that last episode. I saw it just last night. And just even like comparing this Johnny Flynn to the guy in Lovesick, it's interesting to see someone develop in as a grown up, as an actor. Anyways. Enough about all that now. Back to Pride and Prejudice, finally.
I know, and after such, like, jam-packed chapters, too.
Yeah, I kept thinking this chapter's never gonna end. But let's review what happened until now. So let's review before we get into the summary of chapters 21 through 25, previously on Pride and Prejudice. We had a busy time with our favorite sisters in Longbourn. We got to hear the sad story of Mr. Wickham and how he was so dastardly treated by our favorite introvert, Mr. Darcy. Then we got treated to the Netherfield Ball, where Wickham does not attend, but Darcy does. And he and Lizzie engage in a spirited dance where they banter and appear to be immune to the crackling chemistry that may or may not have been projected on them by us, the readers. The rest of the ball doesn't go great because Elizabeth's family seems determined to embarrass her, including our favorite deluded priest, Mr. Collins, who later decides to propose to her in the most unromantic way possible. Elizabeth says no to the delight of her father and the absolute devastation of her poor mother and her nerves.
Jam-packed.
So much stuff.
So yeah, a lot less. We're dealing more with the fallout of those chapters, I feel like, in the chapters we read for today.
So why don't you fill us in then? What happened?
Yes. So, excuse me. A few days after Elizabeth has refused the proposal of Mr. Collins, she encounters Mr. Wickham in Meryton. He apologizes for his absence from the ball and walks her home, where Elizabeth is delighted to introduce him to her parents. That same day, a letter arrives bringing bad news for Jane from Miss Bingley, who informs her that Bingley and his party are returning to London indefinitely, and implying that Bingley plans to marry Darcy's sister, Georgiana. Elizabeth comforts Jane, telling her that this turn of events is all Miss Bingley's doing and not her brother's, and that surely Bingley will definitely, absolutely, positively return to Netherfield. Suddenly, news arrives that Mr. Collins has proposed to Charlotte Lucas, and that Elizabeth's friend has accepted. Elizabeth is shocked, despite Charlotte's insistence that the match is the best for which she could hope. Mrs. Bennet is, of course, furious for her daughter for allowing a husband to escape, and as the days go by with no word from Bingley, Jane's marriage prospects too begin to appear limited. Miss Bingley sends another letter, this one praising the beauty and charm of Darcy's sister. The letter further states that Bingley will remain in London all winter, putting an end to the Bennet's hopes that he might return to Netherfield. Elizabeth is very upset by the news and complains to Jane that people lack merit or sense, referring to Bingley for apparently abandoning Jane and to Charlotte Lucas for agreeing to marry Mr. Collins. Meanwhile, Mrs. Bennet's hopes of seeing her daughters wed fade rapidly, and Mr. Bennet just seems amused by the entire thing and encourages Elizabeth's interest in Wickham so that she, like her sister, can be crossed in love. Mrs. Bennet's brother, Mr. Gardiner, comes to stay with the family. Immediately recognizing Jane's sadness, the Gardiners invite Jane to accompany them back to London when they finish their visit in the hopes that a change of scenery might lift her spirits. Jane accepts, excited also that in London she might get an opportunity to see Mr. Bingley. In the course of an evening spent with various friends and military officers, Mrs. Gardiner notices that Elizabeth and Wickham, though not in any serious love, show a definite preference for each other. Because of his lack of money, Mrs. Gardiner does not think of Wickham as a good match for Elizabeth, though she is fond of Wickham's stories of his life around the Darcy's estate at Pemberley, which is near where Mrs. Gardiner grew up. So, not quite as information heavy. I remember, this is a very distinct part in my reading, I remember from when I read this book the first time. And I remember being, not bored, but being very much, okay, so like what happens next? Like when do we get to see Darcy again? Because it is sort of like a lull, and we're experiencing it as the reader, but I feel like the characters are also sort of experiencing it.
Well, I mean, it would be exhausting for this, what, 56 chapter book to just be constantly at a high pace. So, you know, as we talked about before, compared to Sense and Sensibility, there's a lot of rise and fall and setting up stories and resolving them and starting new ones and having like the overarching story that is a lot more subtle, I think. So I think it's probably a good place for a lull. It's a little weird that it's just like, it happens to be these five chapters that we are reading right now.
But we do get, you know, a fair amount of stuff sort of there, you know, the aftermath of the Collins rejection of his proposal. And so he doesn't really take it well, does he?
No, he's, well, when it first happens, he's just kind of like, huh, maybe she isn't the person for me. But then he's kind of a jerk about it the whole time. As for the gentleman himself, his feelings were chiefly expressed not by embarrassment or dejection or by trying to avoid her, but by stiffness of manner and resentful silence. And then he spends the whole time just talking to Charlotte Lucas, which, I mean, I can't super blame him because, you know, he just opened himself up, even though he did it in the worst possible and most clueless way, and she rejected him completely. But because it's Mr. Collins, I still don't like him.
Yeah, and it is sort of funny because we get in the beginning of the first chapter that we read, chapter 21, that he's spending all this time talking to Miss Lucas, and Elizabeth is just, like, relieved by it and thinking that her friend is, like, helping her out. Meanwhile, Charlotte has her own separate plan, like, master plan.
Charlotte is our, is, I don't want to say conniving because I feel like that connotes something like vicious and evil about her, but she's got things going. She's got some irons in the fire, if that's the saying.
No, I, you know, whenever I look back on the story, I sort of, you know, I always sort of look back on it being that Charlotte is really reasonable and pragmatic, but it's interesting to come back and read the actual prose because it makes it seem a lot more I agree, conniving does make it sound like a little nefarious, but it is like they use the word scheme. Like, Austin literally says that, you know, it was the object of nothing less than to secure her from any return of Mr. Collins' addresses by engaging them towards herself. Such was Miss Lucas's scheme. So she is plotting this out very assuredly, and it's something that I don't think I really realized on previous experiences with this text.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like she was scheming to steal him away. By this time, he had been fully and completely and soundly rejected. And like you said, Elizabeth is like, oh, thank you so much for doing me this favor of keeping him off my hands and keeping him distracted. And Cheryl going, no, 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 it's totally fine. She didn't exactly, she wasn't forthcoming to Lizzie about it in the first place. But she's not, she's just sort of taking advantage. She saw an opening.
In chapter 22, I love this section. It says, Mr. Collins, to be sure, was neither sensible nor agreeable. His society was irksome, and his attachment to her must be imaginary. But still, he would be her husband. Without thinking highly of men or of matrimony, marriage had always been her object. It was the only honorable provision for well-educated young women of small fortune, and however uncertain of giving happiness, must be their pleasant preservative from want. This preservative she had now obtained, and at the age of 27, without having ever been handsome, she felt all the good luck of it.
I think we both had that listed as Burns too.
Yeah.
And I was just like, is this supposed to be against Collins or is it about the new Mrs. Collins? Because both of them aren't super nice either. But we like Charlotte.
Yeah. No, I like Charlotte too. And I think we are supposed to still like Charlotte, but it's just such a, it's so rational. And it's more than I sort of remembered coming away from it. Because I feel like a lot of portrayals of it and a lot of retrospective thinking about it are, you know, Charlotte is, doesn't want to be an old maid. You know, she knows she's not pretty enough or whatever to get someone above her station. And this is like a last desperate measure. But when you read it out like that, it just sounds so much more, this is the cards that I was dealt, and this is what I'm going to do with it, and I'm feeling pretty good about myself because I took care of it, and I took care of myself and my family, and I did the best thing for everyone.
Exactly. It's very like, you weren't using it. You didn't want it. Why let this go to waste? I do appreciate, though, that, like, the code is still, like, fully intact, and Charlotte is very aware of it, because she's the one who, she's like, don't tell anyone when you go back to the Bennets what happened. Elizabeth should hear from me, and Charlotte, good on her word, actually goes there. She talks to Lizzie in private. She's like, because Elizabeth, whose friendship she valued beyond that of any other person, she wanted to protect that. She wanted to make it as less painful as possible, because she knows that, like, even though rationally it should be fine, that doesn't mean that someone's feelings might not get hurt.
Yeah.
I think Charlotte's fine. I dig Charlotte. I'm sorry she has to marry this man, but Charlotte can take care of herself.
Yeah, I know. I agree completely. And it makes sort of Elizabeth's reaction come off kind of poorly. She doesn't take the news very well. What is it? She says, the possibility of Mr. Collins fancying himself in love with her friend had once occurred to Elizabeth within the last day or two, but that Charlotte would encourage him seemed almost as far from possibility as that she could encourage him herself, and her astonishment was consequently so great as to overcome at first the bounds of decorum, and she couldn't help crying out, engaged to Mr. Collins, my dear Charlotte, impossible.
Yeah, it's so sad that Lizzie is actually letting this get between them, because, you know, this is something when they do try to hang out, it's something that they're just not talking about, really. And then on top of that, every time Collins comes to visit, he stays with the Bennets, and they're like, what's this dude still doing here? And with Mrs. Bennet also reacting so poorly and being so unkind about it, it's kind of funny, because, you know, it's so hard to like Mrs. Bennet most of the time. Even though we're making our effort to try and understand her. And Elizabeth is supposed to be more like Mr. Bennet, just that kind of funny and not constantly thinking about marriage. But these are the moments where you're like, maybe you're a little more like your mother than you think you are. Maybe you're being a little too emotional and petty, and you should probably take a second and look at yourself.
Well, Charlotte, like, calls her out on her nonsense. She said, do you think it incredible that Mr. Collins should be able to procure any woman's good opinion because he was not so happy to succeed with you? Like, she does call her friend out. Like, you know, just because you don't like him doesn't mean that I wouldn't. So she stands up for herself, which is probably hard if you have a friend like Elizabeth, who's just such a strong personality and sort of delights in finding, you know, things funny like this. It must have been really hard for Charlotte.
Absolutely. She's so judgy, Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen how harsh she is about Darcy, but in fairness, Darcy kind of earned it for himself. But Charlotte has always been there. She's always trying to encourage Elizabeth. And she says, Charlotte, the wife of Mrs. Collins, was a most humiliating picture, and to the pang of a friend disgracing herself and sunk in her esteem was added the distressing conviction that it was impossible for that friend to be tolerably happy in the lot that she had chosen. She thinks that because she can't tolerate Mr. Collins, that Charlotte has the same priorities and same tolerances, and because she doesn't now, she's not as good as she thought she was.
No, and she, like, the phrase that she lowered in her esteem, or sunk in her esteem, is, like, really awful.
It's so snobby.
It's so snobby, and it's so mean. And it comes up later, too, because I don't remember the line exactly, but Elizabeth sort of thinks to herself that, like, now she's going to be closer to her sister because Charlotte, she can't trust Charlotte anymore because Charlotte made such, like, a stupid decision.
I think, actually, Mr. Bennett says something about that, too.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Bennett is sort of a jerk here, also.
He's very unpleasant in this. For it gratified him, Mr. Bennett, he said, to discover that Charlotte Lucas, whom he had been used to think tolerably sensible, was as foolish as his wife and more foolish than his daughter.
Mm.
Dude, what are you doing?
No, it's... Yeah.
He's just here to just crap on everyone.
No, he doesn't handle this. He just, like, sort of laughs about it. And it's an interesting thing because I feel like on our face, we're supposed to dislike Mrs. Bennett or be annoyed by her. And we're supposed to find Mr. Bennett, like, charming and funny. Mm-hmm. But he's a jerk also. And, like, pushing her towards Wickham because he thinks it'd be, like, funny.
What is with that?
No, it's really cruel and mean.
I like this one part, this very long part, actually, about Mrs. Bennett. In the first place, she persisted in disbelieving the whole matter. Secondly, she was very sure that Mr. Collins had been taken in. Thirdly, she trusted that they would never be happy together. And fourthly, that the match would be broken off. Two inferences, however, were plainly deduced from the whole. One, that Elizabeth was the real cause of the mischief. And the other, that she herself had been barbarously misused by them all. And on these two points, she principally dwelt during the rest of the day. Nothing could console and nothing could appease her. Nor did that day wear out her resentment. A week elapsed before she could see Elizabeth without scolding her. A month passed before she could speak to Sir William or Lady Lucas without being rude. And many months were gone before she could at all forgive their daughter.
Yeah, I'm of two minds of this because she's overreacting. Yes. But the Lucases are being pretty cruel about it. Like, Lady Lucas is very much enjoying coming over and bragging about having a daughter married and about Mr. Collins, like, knowing full well that Mrs. Bennett is very upset about it. And I think, like, right after Charlotte gets engaged to Mr. Collins, there's, like, a throwaway line about how the Lucases are guessing how long Mr. Bennett has to live.
Yeah, that was really... That was a little cold. I thought, if you want to be a little more sympathetic, maybe not pulling out the calendar and marking off days is the best idea. Like, what is with these parents?
I know. There's another kind of throwaway line where it says that Mrs. Bennett says that Mary might have been prevailed on to accept him. And here's my weird, like, fan theory or whatever. I don't know why Mary wasn't the first choice to hook up with Mr. Collins. Like, they seem like the tempers have, like, are the most suited for each other. Like, I feel like if they immediately had been like, oh, wow, like, Mary would probably be a good wife of Mr. Collins, they would have just been a match and it would have been fine.
I don't know.
I mean, this is obviously more drama and more fun, but, like...
Because we hear about how, like, Mary's a little plainer than the other sisters, so maybe she isn't... as good at making herself noticeable. She's just 100% the middle child of this family. And I think we've seen that in adaptations too, where she's just kind of trying to weasel her way in there, not necessarily to be married, but like, no, I want this guy's attention too, like everyone else. And like, I want everyone else's attention, but they're not giving to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it never quite seems to work out.
Yeah, it's just like kind of a throwaway thought, but I always sort of was like, yeah, like, why not Mary?
Yeah, she was always nice. She was nicer to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no doubt she would actually say yes.
She would have said yes. But, I don't know, this is more fun, obviously. more fun for us.
And just to revisit Charlotte's response, I am not romantic, you know, I never was. I only ask a comfortable home. And frankly, I can't say I don't relate to that.
No, Charlotte knows the world. You know, it's, I don't think being practical is something that we should sort of look down on, even if our main protagonist, Elizabeth, does.
Mm-hmm. It's survival. It's like we've talked about before. It's just survival. That's her priority. Not necessarily love. Elizabeth has been raised to be her father's favorite. And he's just like, meh. Which is interesting because they're all at risk of being out on the streets when he dies. Yeah. If they don't get married.
We can't really, I mean, as much as like I want, you know, looks don't matter. You know, it's all your personality. And to a degree, it's kind of true in Austen books. But, like, we can't ignore the reality that Jane and Elizabeth and the other Bennet sisters mostly are pretty girls, are handsome, to use the vernacular of the time. And that's, like, a kind of social capital. Like, being pretty in this world is a way to catch a man, and vice versa. You know, Wickham, obviously, is a handsome man who could, you know, marry someone above his station as well, based on that. And Charlotte isn't as pretty as her friend and knows the reality of the situation and is sort of using what she's got. And Elizabeth sort of has more natural charms or whatever that she can use. And I don't want to ignore that fact and that calculus that Charlotte has to make.
Yeah. It's almost like Elizabeth doesn't recognize this privilege she has being mm-hmm. this beautiful, you know, engaging personality. And Charlotte's like, I'm 27.
Yeah.
27. My parents don't have a lot to leave me. There's a bunch of us that we have to share. And maybe we'll just all end up impoverished. And there's worse mm-hmm. people than Collins who could at least probably be guided around to what you want him to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we'll see how happy Charlotte end up, but we don't have Charlotte and Elizabeth are not our only drama going on. We also have poor Jane.
Jane. Poor sweet lovely Jane. She gets a letter from Caroline while they're all out that one night, mm-hmm. I believe. Yeah. And she doesn't say anything at first because she's Jane. She doesn't want to ruin everyone's fun. And Elizabeth finally gets it out of her that, hey, this is from Caroline. Turns out they've all basically just fled Netherfield into the night for London with no plan for return anytime soon. It's not like they own the estate anyways. They're just renting it. And not just Bingley is gone for business. They've all gone because they're like, well, no point in sticking around. Sorry we couldn't say goodbye in person. By the way, Mr. Darcy has a really charming, beautiful, lovely young sister. Mm-hmm. That I think very highly of, and obviously Bingley does too.
Oh, this letter is so mean. She says something like, you're the only person that I'm gonna miss. Like, this town sucks.
At first it doesn't seem as bad.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, I mean, other than that dig being like, you're the only person who really like, hopefully we stay in touch and write a lot. And then it's just like, yeah, also we're sorry that we couldn't say goodbye, but there's a lot of reasons why we couldn't. I wish that I could hear that you, my dearest friend, had any intention of making one of the crowd, but of that I despair. I sincerely hope your Christmas in Hertfordshire may abound in the gaieties which that season generally brings, and that your beaux will be so numerous as to prevent your feeling the loss of three of whom we shall deprive you. And at that point, it's a little bit of that, like, upper crust air kiss, oh my god, I love your skirt kind of thing, where
mm-hmm.
it's too nice almost, and you don't think that it's really sincere.
Yeah. That's like Miss Bingley's MO, is being too nice to be sincere.
She overdoes it a little bit because it's like she doesn't really know how real people are nice.
Yeah, she's like her approximation of what she thinks people say when they're trying to be nice, but she doesn't mean it.
Yeah, and then the more and more she goes into the letter, because they kind of reveal it in chunks, mm-hmm. the more you're like, what the heck, Caroline? What are you saying? What is wrong with you? Because afterwards she's just like, oh, hey, there's this Georgiana Darcy. She's quite lovely. And then farther on, she just like goes on and on about this, just listing all about this young woman that she thinks so highly of and why she's so amazing and beautiful and accomplished. And Jane is convinced that Caroline doesn't want her to marry Bingley, which I think we can all agree. Mm-hmm. And that Bingley, but like also tries to make it sound, or at least Jane thinks it sounds that Bingley is just kind of eh on her anyways and is actually down with Georgiana Darcy.
Yeah, I'm sort of, again, like two minds of how I think Elizabeth handles this situation. Mm-hmm. Because I think Elizabeth is mad, right? She knows mm-hmm. that Miss Bingley is a jerk, and she sees that he liked Jane, and she's trying to push him away. And Elizabeth also knows that Miss Bingley likes Mr. Darcy. And so pushing her own brother towards Miss Darcy maybe means that she'll be in close proximity to Mr. Darcy and, you know, sparks might fly, blah, blah. But I think she lays into it a little thick to Jane. She knows that Miss Bingley knows that her brother's in love with you. You know, like, you're not, she's anxious to get Darcy in trouble. And I think she is maybe not being the best sister that she could be, because she's so mad at Miss Bingley. And you even have Jane mm-hmm. defending Caroline because she's, like, so upset about her sister being upset. You know, Caroline is incapable of willfully deceiving anyone. And all that I can hope in this case is that she's deceived herself. You know, I just feel really bad for Jane. And, like, later in the book, you have it coming from Elizabeth, and you also have it coming from their mother, to the point where Jane, like, lashes out as much as Jane can possibly lash out. She's just, you know, like, oh, that my dear mother had more command over herself. Can she not see the idea of the pain that she gives me by her continual reflections on him? Mm-hmm. And this is, like, the most upset we've ever seen Jane. And it's just really upsetting, because even in that sentence she goes, you know, like, but no, I will not repine. It cannot last long. He will be forgot, and we shall be as we were before. He may live in my memory as the most amiable man of my acquaintance, but that is all. And your heart breaks for Jane, because, like, everyone around her is just not being very helpful and making it worse by just constantly talking about it. And she's so lovely and wonderful, and I just feel really bad for her in these chapters.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's trying to help, and they're trying to be like, no, he was really in love with you. But, like, for Jane, what would be easier for her to move on with? Because it's not like she, in her position as a woman, is like a middle-class woman, isn't going to have a lot of recourse. She can't just, like, chase after him. That's just not a thing that's done, and it's certainly not a Jane thing. But everyone's just like, no, there's still hope. And Caroline, I think there's a part where everyone's just like wondering, which is still better? That, do you think it would be easier still to, oh, Elizabeth is really trying to push this whole, it's the sisters that are terrible. Yeah. You're trying to steer Bingley away. Don't worry, he still loves you. And Jane, being the actually fairly solid person that she is like, but my dear sister, can I be happy even supposing the best and accepting a man whose sisters and friends are all wishing him to marry someone else? And it's like, that's a good point.
It's a very good point.
Yeah, like, how much money do you need to ignore the fact that all your in-laws and everyone is just looking down at you and thinking you don't belong here, it should be someone else, all that stuff?
No, and I think later in chapter 25, Mrs. Gardner says, you know, a young men come to new towns and they fall in love with pretty girls for a few weeks, and then something separates them, and then they forget about them. And this happens a lot. And I think from mm-hmm. what we know, that is a very fair reading of what happened between Jane and Mr. Bingley. You know, Elizabeth mm-hmm. says, you know, I never saw such a promising inclination. You know, like, I know they were in love, and we really only have Elizabeth and what Mrs. Bennet and, like, the town saying, you know, like, oh, he danced his first two dances with Jane. Like, we know Mr. Bingley liked Jane. We do. But it is a completely reasonable explanation that he came to town, had a crush on a pretty girl, and now has to attend to business in London. And I don't know necessarily if it helps Jane to just keep going on and on about how much he loved her.
And now doesn't.
Yeah. And I think Jane's right. If this man is going to let his whole family push him around like this, is he even worthy of Jane's affections? We like Mr. Bingley and we're biased for him, but maybe he's not, you know, if he's going to let them, like, take him from London without even saying goodbye to her, like she finds out from his sister, Like, why didn't he even write, like, a letter? I don't know. I'm starting to sour on Mr. Bingley a little bit.
And you're not alone in that, because later, I think in chapter 24, Elizabeth starts having the same feelings too. She's like, I liked him because he made my sister super happy and he really cared about her and she was sick and he was so attentive. All his thoughts were about her. But now if, like, I believe that he cared about her, but what kind of person is he? If he's going to let the whims of his family and friends sway him away, he's like, it's fine, it's not great that he'll sacrifice his own happiness to make them happy and to, you know, let them pressure him, but the fact that this is also affecting Jane's happiness really puts her off him. Mm-hmm. But I will point out that at some point when Elizabeth is talking to Jane about it in chapter 21, and she's just like, well, is all that enough? Like, would you even have said no? Would you have said no if he proposed to you with all this hostility around you? And Jane says, how can you talk so? Jane said, faintly smiling, you must know that though I should be exceedingly grieved at their disposition or disapprobation, I could not hesitate. And I was like, oh, she really loved him.
Jane is so lovely. She
would marry him.
It almost seems like weird that like a person like that could exist.
And I think more than once, Elizabeth tells her, you are too good a person. You're being way too generous. And I think some of it isn't just generosity. I mean, maybe I'm projecting, but I think some of it is just protective as well. If she can be like, mm-hmm. It's fine, it's cool. They didn't really try to do something directly against me or try to insult me. It's just how things worked out. And maybe that's just her way of accepting things and moving on. But it seems like people around her don't process things that way. So they're just like, no, this is what happened. You need to be upset about it and then move on. She just doesn't want to deal with that.
It's interesting that we get two different people sort of bringing up the fact that if it happened to Elizabeth, like, she'd be fine. Like, her dad says, what about you? Like, a woman should be jilted in love or whatever. Like, who, you know, Mr. Wickham will do it for you. And then later, Mrs. Gardner says to Elizabeth, it's too bad that this didn't happen to you because, you know, you would just sort of laugh it off and be fine with it. And I wonder if that's really fair. Like, is that a nice thing to be said to someone? You know, like, it's too bad you weren't.
You're cold-hearted enough that it'll be fine.
Yeah.
I don't know that she would be, though, because, I mean, she's still mad at Darcy for that time that he insulted her behind her back.
That's true. Yeah.
And literally every time Wickham opens his mouth, she's like, yeah, no, he is terrible. Good. I've collected more evidence to prove that I'm right.
No, it's weird how Mr. Darcy isn't in these chapters, really, but he's, like, very much in the background of these chapters. Like, he's the one keeping Bingley away. We get some rehashing of Wickham talking shit on Darcy throughout the town. We get Miss Gardner reflecting on Darcy and hearing stories about him growing up. So he's still very much present in the background of this book, even when he's just, like, far removed from physically being there.
Mm-hmm. Like, the first mention we get of Wickham in these chapters, he's confirming that, yes, I didn't show up because of him. It just seemed easier, basically. Mm-hmm. Even though, as you've pointed out before, he had said, you know, if anyone is supposed to leave this company who doesn't want to be around, Darcy's the one who needs to leave, and I'm going to enjoy myself.
And Elizabeth is like, of course, like, how prudent of you. It's like, girl.
What are you doing?
Yeah. I can't wait to give him, like, introduce him to my parents.
But it's funny because Wickham is still able to charm flippin' everyone.
Well, now that Darcy and everybody's gone, he's just like everybody around town knows the story. Like, the gossip is, like, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that something that he, like, whispers in a back room of a party to Elizabeth is something that now, like, the whole town is well aware of.
In the past, when he's brought it up, he's just like, well, it's not really for me to talk about Mr. Darcy and his disposition and all that stuff, but let me tell you about that time he completely ruined my life and make sure kind of everyone knows about it. So it's the first time he's, like, meeting Mrs. Gardner, and he tells her that night, yeah, when they're staying with the Bennets for Christmas, I'm being made acquainted with the present Mr. Darcy's treatment of him, of Wickham. She tried to remember some of that gentleman's reputed disposition when quite a lad, which might agree with, and was confident at last that she recollected having heard Mr. Fitzwilliam Darcy formerly spoken of as a very proud, ill-natured boy. It's kind of funny the way we, like, remember things, because, you know, memory is very malleable and it's not precise. That's kind of one of the beautiful things about memories, is that they can kind of change how, depending on how we think about them, and they're kind of subjective. And hearing this charming, handsome Mr. Wickham's story, she's just like, yeah, I guess he was kind of a brat when he was growing up, because Miss Gardner spent a lot of time in that area where Wickham's from.
Yeah, I like the Gardeners, and I feel like on my previous readings I've sort of glossed over their arrival, like, okay, like, mm-hmm. more siblings of Bennet, like, whatever. But Jane does sort of stress in her way how important the Gardeners are to them, and how much Elizabeth and Jane in particular value their opinion. And right away Mrs. Gardner sees that. What she said, Mrs. Gardner, rendered suspicious by Elizabeth's warm condemnation of him, meaning Wickham, narrowly observed them both. Without supposing them, from what she saw, to be very serious in love, their preference for each other was plain enough to make her a little uneasy, and she resolved to speak to Elizabeth on the subject. So now we have another person, right? And, like, the only other person has been Jane, of all people, to sort of look at Wickham and be like, who is this very charming fellow that Elizabeth is charmed by? What's his deal? Like, the words suspicious, uneasy are associated with him right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting who is suspicious of him and who isn't in these chapters that we've read.
So this is the first time we've met the Gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
They live in town, correct? In London?
On Gracechurch Street, which is not as fancy as where the Bingleys reside.
Yes. And at the beginning of chapter 25, I get this sense that she's kind of the Jane of her sisters, basically. One, I didn't appreciate this. Mr. Gardner was a sensible, gentleman-like man, greatly superior to his sister, and well by nature and as education. I kind of hated the way they were putting people down to compliment Mr. G. But Mrs. Gardner, like, she rolls in for Christmas. She gives out some presents. She talks the latest fashions, which everyone is super interested by. But, you know, she gets down to business with her sister, Mrs. Bennet, and she's basically just the sounding board. She knows to just, like, sit there and let it roll over her, because we know that, like, Mrs. Bennet has a lot of sound to board. And she just lets Mrs. Bennet go on and on. I did like this paragraph. The Lucases are very artful people indeed, sister. They are all for what they can get. I'm sorry to say it of them, but so it is. It makes me very nervous and poorly to be thwarted so in my own family, and to have neighbors who think of themselves before anyone else. However, your coming just at this time is the greatest of comforts, and I am very glad to hear what you tell us of long sleeves. I thought that was
that's
really
a great
funny.
Line.
It's kind of, like, encompasses Mrs. Bennet at her core, but I feel like, to me, she's like the Jane, you know, talking about how Elizabeth is maybe more like her mother than you think. Mrs. Gardner seems like more the sensible one who just kind of hangs out and is chill and listens and pays a little bit of attention. She's not maybe quite as driven by her emotions as she is, more like seeing what's going on and making a reasonable assessment of the state of things and what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation between her and Jane is actually really interesting, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Jane?
I think it's doesn't she talk to Elizabeth?
Or is it with Elizabeth? It was with Elizabeth. Sorry. Yeah. The conversation he had with Elizabeth is really interesting, because Elizabeth is talking about how violently in love that Bingley was, and Mrs. G says, but that expression of violently in love is so hackneyed, so doubtful, so indefinite that it gives me very little idea. It is as often applied to feelings which arise from a half hour's acquaintance as to a real strong attachment. Pray, how violent was Mr. Bingley's love? I never saw a more promising inclination. He was growing quite inattentive to other people and wholly engrossed by her. Even every time they met, it was more decided and remarkable. At his own ball, he offended two or three young ladies by not asking them to dance, and I spoke to him twice myself without receiving an answer. Could there be finer symptoms? Is not general incivility the very essence of love? Which is an interesting line.
Mm-hmm.
Considering her and Darcy. And Miss Gardner, you know, she at least is listening, because she's like, oh yeah, okay, oh, of that kind of love, which I suppose him to have felt, poor Jane. And then she switches focus back to Jane and how she must be feeling after all that. So I think, like, there's something about who's paying attention, who's trying to get like a good grasp on what's actually happening as opposed to what everyone is telling her is happening.
Yeah, we really get a sense that the Gardeners are sort of surrogate parents, especially to Elizabeth and Jane, where their parents are sort of failing. Because we have Mrs. Bennet just like railing on and on about how upset she is and how they're going to be kicked out of their home. She almost had daughters married, you know, all this stuff. And then you have Mr. Bennet, you know, cracking jokes and not really attuned to either of his daughters either, as much as we might enjoy him. But then you get the Gardeners coming with, you know, like, come into town, Jane, you look, you know, sad, you know, like, let's talk about this. And the contrast between the Bennets and them is really starkly drawn with just like a short conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I, again, like in their conversation too, Elizabeth brings up Darcy as well without prompting. And she says like, Mr. Darcy may perhaps have even heard of such a place as Gracechurch Street, but he would hardly think a month's ebullition enough to cleanse from its impurities were he once to enter it. And depend on it, Mr. Bingley never stirs without him. So she's like thinking about him.
She really is. He doesn't wander far.
Yeah. And it's just like funny that, you know, like, here are these people that, you know, we respect their opinion, we respect them. And then you have Elizabeth sort of being like, well, it's a good thing that Darcy didn't meet them, because he would probably think that they were like below him. And aren't they wonderful? And like, he's a jerk. It's like not even giving him the chance to like.
When was the last time we actually saw Darcy too? Like, when was he actively involved in the story and talking and all that stuff? It feels like lately he's just mentioned a lot or thought of a lot.
Yeah, was it the last time was the ball maybe, right?
I think so.
Yeah. And in the ball, he sort of has that realization, like, I like her too much. I need to, like, chill a bit. So the parting on his side seems partially motivated by a desire to distance himself from her. And so they're both like thinking about each other, just maybe not in the ways that we want them to.
Oh dear, Mr. Darcy still around even though he's left town. So it's kind of neat, personally. You know, when we started out, we didn't like Mr. Darcy. No one liked Mr. Darcy. And the fact that any interest in him, there was like no interest in him. There's no interest in him at all. We don't even want to think about him. But now we're thinking about him actually kind of a lot. Mm-hmm. And we still don't like him, but he's so so ever-present. And I enjoy that because he's kind of crept up on everyone.
Yeah, even if like everyone hates his guts.
Who doesn't love a little love-hate?
Oh, I mean,
as opposed to Mr. Wickham, who is just so open about all this stuff, but it also does feel like him controlling the narrative in every single turn and kind of, it's almost like prophylactic, making sure everyone likes him before they hear something else.
It's very opportunistic.
That guy.
I know. But yeah, I mean, I think that's like most of the important stuff in these chapters.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Well, because like we said, not too much actually seems to happen. A lot of it's like resolution of one storyline and a continuation of Jane and Bingley's story, which is basically, and now he's gone.
Yeah, and in terms of setup, we have, you know, Wickham's still there. Him and Elizabeth mm-hmm. seem to still like each other. So that's sort of like a hanging thread. And then we have Jane going to London. So she might run into Mr. Bingley. So those are sort of this. And of course, you know, Charlotte getting married to Mr. Collins. So mm-hmm. those are sort of the threads we have hanging as we get into. I mean, I don't know if your copy has this, but mine has chapters 23 or 24 and 25 in volume 2 or book 2.
Mm-mm.
So this is sort of I don't know how or why they choose to do that in some versions, but this does seem like a delineation into this is the next step of the story. So we have mm-hmm. A little more setup now.
It's going to be interesting because Jane seems hopeful that she's going to run into Bingley, and everyone's like, probably not.
Yeah.
They're in a different part of town. They have slightly different circles. The Bingley family is quote unquote superior, and Mr. Darcy certainly wouldn't deign to visit that part of town that the Gardeners are in either. But at the same time, as we learned in Sense of Sensibility, people just run into each other in London all the time.
That's true. That's a good point. That is something we learned, isn't it?
It's a small world indeed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we end things, though, let's
talk burns.
So the both of us had the one that we shared.
Mm-hmm.
That we talked about earlier about Mr. Collins being neither sensible nor agreeable. I think you had a few more, too.
Oh, yeah. What is it? I think the one that we both had was, in as short a time as Mr. Collins' long speeches would allow, everything was settled between them to the satisfaction of both.
I love that line.
That's like old school Bird, right? Because it's like shady, I guess.
It's low key. It's very low key, but it's there. You know that she's not saying something nice about his speeches.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's so much. I think the most candidates we have is in chapter 22 about Mr. Collins. Because the next one I have is the stupidity with which he was favored by nature must guard his courtship from any charm that could make a woman wish for its continuance. And Miss Lucas, who accepted him solely from the pure and disinterested desire of an establishment, cared not how that establishment were granted. This is, like, cold.
It is. Well, I mean, I just realized all of ours have to do with Collins and Charlotte.
Yeah. But, I mean, they sort of deserve it. I mean, at least Collins does. Like,
oh, certainly. And I mean, not to be a snobby Elizabeth here, but it is hard not to be like, well, that's what you're settling for about
Charlotte.
Yeah,
it's reassuring that she knows it. She's like, okay, like, he's a jerk.
Yeah, whatever. But also I'll be able to feed myself.
Yeah, I'm going to get married.
In chapter 24, it says, "For were I persuaded that Charlotte had any regard for him, I should only think worse of her understanding than I now do of her heart, that the woman who marries him cannot have a proper way of thinking." Everyone is just so unkind to Charlotte about it, though.
Yeah, no, that's really mean, but it's a good burn.
It is. So, I mean, why not? We have all this potential in the Collinses. May as well dig deep. What are you looking forward to next? Since we have, like, some resolution to some stories and we have maybe, like, the pre-beginnings of other stories, what kind of things are you hoping we encounter in chapters 26 through 30?
Yeah, you know, I hope Jane has a better time in London than I think we think she's going to have, first of all. And second, I would like to know something of Darcy. You know, what's he up to? What's he thinking about? We know we'll probably see him again. And then also, you know, what's the deal with Wickham exactly? Like, I get a very sketchy vibe from him, but our protagonist and the person that we're rooting for the most is still very much into him.
Yeah, they have a really, like, nice, easygoing, comfortable vibe when the two of them are together, which seems nice.
Mm-hmm.
But when he keeps repeating this same story about how he was slighted, it's kind of hard to not wonder, what aren't you telling us?
Yeah, it doesn't look like great for him, but we still don't really know what his deal is exactly. And right now we sort of just have to take it at face value. Like, yeah, he's annoying about it, but he has faced these hardships, so
Something happened to him.
Yeah. But are you looking forward to anything else?
I like the Gardeners. I kind of hope we get a little bit more of them, just because they are a calming presence, I find.
Yeah.
In this, because everyone's actually far more dramatic than they probably want to take credit for. And we have introduced to us off screen, so to speak, Georgiana Darcy.
Oh, yes.
We've heard about how Darcy dotes on her and adores her. And now Caroline's doing the same thing, because Caroline's always just repeating whatever the hell Darcy's into. There's potential there. Is she really as delightful and wonderful and accomplished? We'll find out. Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
But until then, so this actually puts us about halfway through the book.
Oh, really?
Just about. Yeah. There's 56 chapters, right?
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. I didn't even occur to me.
I know. We just took too long away from the book.
I know.
We're back to Longbourn.
No one married.
Not even Charlotte, because it's not until Collins comes back.
That's true.
Oh, and he was called away because of Lady de Burgh, so maybe we'll finally find out something about her other than how amazing and wonderful a patron she is.
Yes, I very much want to see her closet shelves.
Yeah. That'll be good. Until next time, though, when we're reading chapters 26 through 30, Jesse, where can people find us?
Yes, well, you can take a look at our website, thedailynightly.com. We have a Twitter account at NightlyPod, an Instagram at TheDailyNightly, and of course an email at TheDailyNightly@gmail.com. And remember, Nightly spelled K-N-I-G-H-T-L-E-Y. If you want to find out why it's spelled that way, then watch Emma and then listen to our episode about it.
And then maybe watch it again and then email us and talk about it because
yeah.
It's so great. Exactly. Yeah, pretty much it's just me texting Jesse nightly things all the time.
We kept it together pretty well this episode. I feel like we could have been a lot worse, so kudos to us.
Yeah, good for us. Yeah, we're containing it. We're super reasonable, not at all overly fangirl kind of girls.
No, we're super chill and reasonable. We're Charlotte Lucas about the whole thing.
Yeah, very pragmatic. Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of his awesome music at the top and bottom of the episode. And until next time, guys.
Is that happy reading?
Yeah.